Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. This is episode 252 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. This podcast should hopefully be pretty short. It's just a very specific topic I want to talk about, a topic that is really high yield on the exam these days, especially Step 2 CK. And the topic is mainly post-exposure prophylaxis, like after you get exposed to, like, you know, a particular infectious disease, you know, what are you supposed to do / give. I'll talk about the common ones that tend to pop up on exams, and then I'll talk about a few that really pop up, but when they do, people almost uniformly get them wrong. So let's jump right into it. And as a reminder, if you're interested in the 10-hour USMLE Step 2 CK course, it's taking place next Saturday, the 8th. Again, it's 6 to 10 a.m. Pacific, noon to 4 p.m. Pacific, and 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific. Again, we end up covering probably like 800 or more concepts from peds, surgery, psych, IM, OB-GYN, and neuro. Again, very high-yield course. Again, a lot of people have attended it, and they found it to be really helpful. And it's not the kind of course where it's like the same thing you hear every time. I actually update the course pretty frequently. Just again to kind of stay on the cutting edge of what the MBME is doing these days. So it's not going to be like a stale course. It's going to like keep up with the changes that are currently being frequently being made on the exam and what is like being emphasized. So if you're interested, just either send me an email through the website, or you can shoot me an email at Divine Intervention Podcasts with an S at the end at gmail.com. Okay. So what is post-exposure prophylaxis, right? Basically, it's basically something you do. I mean, literally, the name is very descriptive. Post-exposure prophylaxis. You've been exposed to something. You get some thing, either a drug, or it can be like a vaccine or an immune globulin that will protect you from, you know, developing sequelae of that exposure, right? So developing sequelae of that exposure, or, you know, making you not even develop that problem in the first place, right? So I'm just going to jump straight into it again. Hopefully these are things you know pretty well. If you don't, you better know this, because trust me, again, this is something your friends at the MBME really care about you knowing. So the first one I'll talk about, right, like the classic one is Hep B, right? So if they give you a question about, they love this one, newborn, they like to test this in one of two ways. It'll be a newborn to a mom that has a hepatitis B. And how do you know a person has hepatitis B, right? Their Hep B surface antigen will be positive. That's it, right? If a person's Hep B surface antigen is positive, they have some kind of Hep B infection. And then, you know, you look at the other stuff they give you in the table. If you see IgM floating somewhere, you know it's an acute infection. If you see IgG floating somewhere, you know it's a chronic infection. But basically, right, you know, that baby, right? I mean, remember, I've talked about this in the vaccine schedule podcast. Those babies are supposed to pretty much get the vaccine. But in addition to getting the vaccine, they need the immune globulin, right? Because remember, if a baby gets Hep B, it becomes chronic, I think, more than like 90% of the time. Versus an adult, if they get Hep B, it becomes chronic, I think, like 5% or less of the time, right? So you give that baby Hep B immune globulin and the Hep B vaccine. Just kind of make sure that you give it in separate arms. Again, you don't want the immune globulin to bind up the vaccine, right? That'll be very helpful under those circumstances. Another classic one will be like a healthcare worker, right? So if you're a healthcare worker, you get a needle stick. Again, if you're a healthcare worker, usually you should have gotten the Hep B vaccine, probably as like some kind of condition of employment. So the thing is, if for whatever bizarre reason though, you are unvaccinated, or you know, your Hep B, you are non-immune to Hep B for some reason. Let's say because you got the vaccine, but you didn't respond to it. I mean, believe it or not, there are actually people like that. They actually get the Hep B vaccine, but they just don't generate antibodies against it. For those people, you're going to give them the Hep B immune globulin. You're going to give them the Hep B vaccine. Even if they've been non-responders in the past, it doesn't matter, right? Give them the Hep B immune globulin and give them the Hep B vaccine, right? But if the person has been vaccinated before and they have like, and they have antibodies, right? Then even if they've been exposed to a person that's infected with Hep B, you actually don't need to give anything. You don't need to give anything. Okay. And then Hep C, right? This is a classic question they love to test, although they love to make it as like a coexisting HIV question. But the thing is, if you're exposed to a patient that has a Hep C, you know, like, again, needle stick or whatever. Unfortunately, there's nothing that can be done. Person's kind of in deep trouble there. Although the good thing about Hep C is that there are now pretty good drugs to treat it, right? Like sofosbuvir, lidipasvir, Harvoni, if you watch TV ads, right? Those NSB inhibitors, right? Those drugs work pretty well. Cure rates is almost like 99%, something like that. So, although those drugs are very expensive. Okay, I guess since we're doing the hepatitis alphabet, let's kind of go into Hep A, right? So the thing is, if you're exposed to a person that has a Hep A, for the most part, you know, again, like let's say you're exposed in some way, shape or form, right? The thing is, if you've never been vaccinated and you're like a normal human being, you just get the Hep A vaccine as the post-exposure prophylaxis and you're fine. But if you notice that the person is immunocompromised, right? Person has HIV or has one of those immunodeficiency diseases like Bruton's or Chiriaki-Gashi or CGD or IgA deficiency or like DeGeorge syndrome, any of those things, then in addition to getting the Hep A vaccine, you should also get the Hep A immune globulin. You should also get the Hep A immune globulin. Okay. Now, HIV, right? What if you've been exposed to a person that has HIV? The thing is, if you've been exposed to a person with HIV, basically, there are one of two regimens you can take, right? There are one of two regimens that you can take. And the way I remember the regimens is I remember, like, the word TELS, like TELS. I don't know. It's just, I feel like it's a handy mnemonic. It's just like T-E-L-Z, right? The T-E tells you one regimen. The L-Z tells you the other regimen. The T-E is just tenofovir and emtricitabine, right? Or you can give lamivudine plus zidovudine, right? So if you notice the dines, right? Lamivudine, zidovudine. You give those two together, or you can give tenofovir or plus emtricitabine. That's basically how you treat a person that has been exposed to HIV. And basically, you need to be on prophylaxis for about 4 weeks, right? So basically a month, right? Because sometimes, unfortunately, one thing that your friends at the MBME do is that they actually ask you like, what are you supposed to do for how long and stuff like that. And then another classic post-exposure prophylaxis scenario you may see on your test is with VZV, right? VZV. So the thing is, again, classic situation can be like a newborn, right? If you're a newborn of a mom that, you know, has signs of like varicella or shingles or whatever, right? Basically, for the most part, you cannot vaccinate those kids, right? Again, remember, the varicella zoster vaccine is a live attenuated vaccine, right? So you can give it to kids that are less than a year old, pretty much, right? So that kid gets VZIG, okay? Varicella zoster immune globulin. That kid should get varicella zoster immune globulin. That's kind of like the big thing you want to keep at the back of your mind on exams. And also, again, if for some reason, right, you have, again, they can give you like a somewhat unusual scenario that almost puts you in that kid less than 1 year old category, right? Basically, people that cannot get live attenuated vaccines, right? So let's say, for example, if it's a pregnant woman, or if it's a person that has HIV and the CD4 count is less than 200, right? They should not be getting the varicella vaccine, right? Just go ahead and give those people VZIG, right? Go ahead and give those people VZIG. But if you're a healthy person, right? If you're a healthy person, you don't have anything, you're not in any of those groups I just talked about, you can go ahead and give the person the varicella vaccine. You can also give them VZIG at the same time. Although typically you just give them the varicella vaccine and they'll be fine, right? They'll be fine. And then another classic one, right, is rabies, right? Rabies. So if a person has been exposed to rabies, for the most part, you need to give them like the rabies immune globulin and the rabies vaccine. And again, you need to give them in separate places. But one gnarly question that the MBME can throw in on exams is where you give the rabies immune globulin. The thing is, you typically want to give the immune globulin around the wound. In fact, if you can inject it into the wound, this is incredibly painful. From what I've heard, it's like super, super, super painful. I hope I'm not confusing this with some other thing, but I think I've heard that it's like incredibly painful. Yes, for those people, you do need to you try to give it around the wound so that, again, it can infiltrate that wound, bind up the toxin as much as is possible. Because remember, once rabies gets to the brain, that's the end of the person's life pretty much, right? So you give the rabies immune globulin and you give the rabies vaccine under those circumstances, right? And again, for the most part, you know, the rabies vaccine, you get it like the day you get the bite pretty much, right? And then you give it like, you know, I almost look at it as the, so you give it 3 days after, and then I just pretty much double the time afterwards, like 3 times 2, you know, around 7 days, 7 times 2, you give it 14 days afterwards, right? So that's the way you handle a person that has been exposed to rabies, right? So again, Hep A, we've talked about Hep B, Hep C, VZV, rabies, varicella, talked about all those things. And then another classic one you may see on exams, right, is meningitis, right? If you've been exposed to a person that has meningitis, basically, right, you can use one of three options. You can use ciprofloxacin, or you can use rifampin, right? Rifampin is actually the preferred regimen. You can also use ceftriaxone. Ceftriaxone is also reasonable. And that thing you can also use is azithromycin, right? So you can use ceftriaxone, azithromycin, rifampin, which is preferred, or ceftriaxone. And obviously, if the person is pregnant, right, the only options you have are azithromycin or ceftriaxone, right? Because remember, rifampin is a teratogen, and ciprofloxacin is, you know, it's not very ideal for the kid's tendon, right? So only if you want to kind of mess up the kid's tendon, then of course you can have at it with Neisseria meningitidis, right? So again, if you've been exposed, rifampin is preferred, but you also have the option to do ciprofloxacin, azithromycin, or ceftriaxone. And again, remember the caveats for people that are pregnant. And then another classic one you may see is pertussis, right? So if you've been exposed to a person with pertussis, again, you should have not gotten in trouble if you were vaccinated in the first place, right? But if you've been exposed, just give some kind of macrolide, right? Like clarithromycin, erythromycin, azithromycin, whatever, it doesn't matter, right? But if for some reason the MBME chooses to not put any of those answers, or they put like some kind of strong contraindication to getting a macrolide, like the person's QT interval is already prolonged or something ridiculous, right? Or the person has like a nasty ventricular arrhythmia history. Then for those people, you can actually give them TMPSMX, trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole, and that will help under those circumstances. And then some unusual scenarios you may see on your exam. If you've been exposed to a person with TB, right? Let's say you've been exposed to a person with TB, unfortunately. Remember, one of the best ways to prevent yourself from getting TB is to wear an N95 mask. That'll be a great preventive medicine question on a test. A surgical mask doesn't really protect you from TB, right? So you want to use like a respirator, basically an N95 mask or a P100 mask, right, to protect yourself. Even if you know you've gotten the vaccine, like the BCG vaccine that people get in developing countries, you still need post-exposure prophylaxis. And typically, what you would usually do is this is one of those rare cases where you don't actually need to start treatment immediately. Just test the person first, right? So the first thing you do is you do like a TB skin test, right? Or alternatively, you can do that interferon gamma release assay. If any of those things come back positive, basically like... And the thing is, the interferon gamma release assay, that's something the MBME generally doesn't care much about. I know that many Q-banks and stuff, they like really, really go after that stuff. But for the most part, the TB skin test is one you keep in mind. And what is the induration cutoff for a person that has been exposed to a person that has a person that has TB? It's actually 5. Because it's almost guaranteed you probably get the TB, right? So you do like a TB skin test. If the induration is 5 millimeters, right, or more, then you go ahead and treat the person for the most part with... You give them the latent TB regimen, right? So you give them isoniazid for 9 months, right? And again, remember, you don't want those people to have peripheral neuropathy while they're at it, right? So typically in those cases, you also give them a vitamin B6. Remember, vitamin B6 is something they can also write as a pyridoxal phosphate. They can also write that as pyridoxal phosphate on an MBME exam. And then one other one that you may see on a test is like tetanus, right? Like tetanus, right? So the thing is, you know, this one is like more like you get into some wound, like stung by a nail, something weird, right? And we're like, okay, let's protect you from tetanus, right? So the thing is, there are many, many, many regimens you see for this thing. And this thing gets very complicated, very fast, right? Very complicated, very fast. But let me teach you how to go about this, okay? If we are not sure of the person's vaccine history, right? So basically, they are one of two piles you can get into. They're one of two piles you can get into, right? If we are not sure of your vaccine history, then typically what we will do is we will give you, in fact, okay, maybe how do I do this to make this easy? Yeah, let me put you in one of two piles to, again, simplify things but make it accurate. Because again, sometimes it's not very ideal for you to simplify things to the point where you then begin to obfuscate the facts. So the big thing is, if you are not sure of a person's tetanus history, right? If we're not sure of the person's tetanus history, or let's say the person got their tetanus series more than like 10 years ago, right? If you fall into this, so I'm going to call these people pile number one, right? So if we're not sure, right? If we're not sure, or you had your series more than 10 years ago, if they tell you this clearly in a question, the thing you're supposed to do is you're supposed to give the vaccine, right? And you can use any vaccine you want. You can use the TD vaccine, or you can use the Tdap vaccine. Either one is fine. And then in addition to that, you need to give the tetanus immune globulin, okay? You need to give the tetanus immune globulin. You need to give the tetanus immune globulin. Now, the thing is, and again, obviously, you go this nuclear if you're seeing that, man, this wound is like super dirty or whatever, right? But again, I'm trying to highlight the scenarios that are most common, right? We're not sure of your vaccine history, or it's been more than 10 years ago you got your vaccine, right? Typically, the tetanus immune globulin and the tetanus, like some kind of vaccine, again, either the TD vaccine or the Tdap vaccine is what you get, pretty much, right? But if, for example, you have, you've gotten your vaccine within like the last 5 years, right? If you've gotten your vaccine within the last 5 years, for the most part, what do you typically do in those people? For those people, typically what you do is to just give nothing. I'll say that again. Again, let me break this up. The way you want to group your tetanus on exams is, so you can be in group A or group B. Group A, are we not sure of your vaccination history, or is it more than 10 years ago, right? Is it more than 10 years ago that you got the tetanus vaccine? For those people, if they're exposed to, like, again, a very nasty wound, right? Typically, what you can do is you give them the tetanus vaccine and then give them the tetanus immune globulin, right? But if it's less than 5 years since you got, if it's less than 5 years since you got, like, your vaccine series and whatnot, for the most part, regardless of the kind of wound, you don't do anything. So again, there's the less than 5 year pile, right? And then there's the greater than 10 year pile, or we are not sure of you, right? If you're in the first greater than 10 year pile, we're not sure of you. Typically, again, if it's a very nasty wound, you can give the tetanus vaccine and the tetanus immune globulin, right? But if you're less than 5 years out from your last vaccine, regardless of the type of wound you have, you don't really get anything, right? But I guess I can maybe introduce like a small third category here, right? If you fall into that first pile and, you know, we're not sure of your vaccine history, we're not sure of your, or it's been more than 10 years ago since you got to whatever, and it's like a very minor wound, not a very contaminated wound, for those people, you can just give them the vaccine. You don't necessarily need to give them the immune globulin, okay? But again, for the most part, I will say the first two categories I mentioned are probably the things that will carry you most of the way on your exam. And I think I'm going to go ahead and stop here. I think for the most part, I feel like I've kind of hit on most of the classic things that tend to pop up on exams. Although I guess another one that you may see on tests, right, is, let's say, for example, you've been exposed to some person that has, I don't know, like neck fash, right? Like neck fash. If you've had like some weird exposures for some reason, usually you would want to get some kind of antibiotic, right? You know, you can get like clindamycin, or you can get azithromycin, right? Or you can get like a mixture of penicillin and rifampin, right? So either penicillin plus rifampin, or azithromycin, or clindamycin. But again, those are very rare situations. You probably will never see that tested on an exam. And then don't forget, many times, they also ask like the method of spread of some things, right? Like rotavirus, C. diff. The way those things are spread, right, is by improper hand washing, right? Or the way people get Staph aureus gastroenteritis is because, you did not refrigerate food properly, right? So hopefully you find this podcast to be helpful. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel. It's called A Divine Intervention USMLE Podcast and Videos. I also have these podcasts on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Google Play. So please subscribe. And then I also have a WordPress website, right? DivineInterventionPodcasts.com. That's where typically you'd find the slides for the stuff I've made. My life lesson for today is about the importance of an inner circle, right? So the thing is, again, you can have many friends, right? But the thing is, there should be a very strong difference between your friends and your inner circle, right? Between your friends and your inner circle. Because the thing is, there are many people that say they're your friends, but they're just your friends for what they can get from you. They are conditional friends, right? They are conditional friends. But you want to be able to find, like, it's not everyone. Like, for example, I have tons and tons and tons of friends, right? There's a lot of people that know me from my med school, from my past and all that stuff, right? But the thing is, in this world, I can probably count on my fingers the number of real friends I have, like people that I can share really deep things with, right? You don't want to be sharing really deep things with people that are your friends. You want to be sharing really deep things with people that are your inner circle. People that don't have any vested interest in profiting from you or anything like that. These are just people that literally, they look out for your own interests, right? So again, you want to be careful of that, because again, I feel like we live in a world where, you know, people are pretty elite backstabbers these days, right? So, because I mean, like, I won't think about it, right? Like, you see people that you're like, oh, I thought this person was my friend. This is someone that's super close to you, super tight with you, right? But the moment something bad happens in your life, like you're in a bad situation or whatever, you then see their real true colors, right? I mean, people like, even a part of the Bible says that a brother is born for the day of adversity, right? Like, it's in the day of adversity, right, that you know who your true friends are, right? Because again, wealth, success has many friends, right? But poverty and failure is an orphan, right? But the Bible says that there's a friend that sticks closer than a brother, right? For a friend to stick closer than a brother, that means it's like a true friend, right? So that's the thing you just want to watch out for, right? Like, watch out. Like, and again, that's the thing. Like, it's very hard to get people that you can regard as your inner circle. But when you have those friendships, keep them, because those friendships will help you down the line, right? At many parts of your life. And also, I challenge you today, be that inner circle kind of person, right? Don't be the person that someone has told you something in confidence, you go and spread it around the world, right? That's not very prudent. And again, next time, no one will want to hang out with you, right? So, you know, kind of set a guard over your own mouth. You don't have to talk, chop all the time, right? So just be careful. Again, just watch who you share things with. Again, it's not everyone that is very happy that you are succeeding, right? There are evil people in this world. Believe it or not, there are evil people in this world. So you need to be careful of who you share things with. Share things only with your inner circle, right? And again, before you let people into your inner circle, really know those people for who they are, right? Are they conditional friends? Are they people that stay close to you when they know they can get stuff from you? I've encountered many of those kinds of people in life, right? But the thing is, those people, again, yes, I'm not saying you should treat them with a short leash or whatever, or be mean to them. No, you just kind of know where they stand, right? You know that, okay, this is who this person is. And, you know, you'll be the best friend you can to those kinds of people. Like, try to be an inner circle kind of person to other people, even if not everyone, right, necessarily does that, right? Again, remember, you're called to live at a higher standard, right, in life, right? You don't need to, because everyone is doing something, therefore I must do it, right? You know, you can be different. You can set yourself apart in some way, shape, or form, right? So again, but just be careful of who you share stuff with. So thank you for listening to this message. I will see you in episode 253. Thank you. Good night, and God bless you.